Hey, awesome nerds, and welcome to another episode of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch television shows we really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in different role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Tallman, and I am joined today by my co-host, Danny Calamari, who is currently lamenting his stolen, ruined, and lost cabbages.
I spent so long gathering these cabbages just for some people to come by and destroy all my hard work yet again.
Cabbages. Oh, there's so much to talk about in regards to the cabbages, isn't there?
Yes, there is, yeah.
There's just, I don't know what it is. Like, this episode, okay, we're talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, the 2005 animated series that is amazing. We're talking about episode 5, The King of Omashu. In this episode, Sokka and Katara must again indulge Aang when he drags him to the Earth Kingdom city of Omashu, another favorite haunting ground of his youth. This is, I feel, when Avatar hit its Avatarness.
It's Avatarness.
Yeah, like this kind of hits a whole bunch. This is the episode. This is the series. This is the session. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. The session of the role playing where you're like, all right, everyone's in sync. We're going to start to like weave in this backstory and weave in all like the role playing parts and like do all the cool stuff
Right,
now.
yeah.
They're really getting into the themes. They're starting to get the tone of everything. And it's funny because it's kind of like a filler episode as well.
Yeah, it
Like, Zuko doesn't even show up.
is. Yeah, it's
Zuko's
funny.
player was sick this week, like I am today.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, normally the filler episodes, like, you can do with. It is filler in the sense of the things that happen, I guess. But what this episode means for Aang, is still pretty important for his story overall, which is great.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel unnecessary either.
No, I think that's a very good point. It doesn't. Yeah, it still ties in with a lot of the stuff that's going on
Yeah.
with the characters rather than just being this, hey, look, now we're in the body swap episode type of thing. Like, we get introduced to this city of Omashu. We get introduced to like how the Avatar's seen. We see this crazy king who's all wacky and a little bit of a threat, but then it turns out that, well, spoilers, because if you watch the episode, it turns out it's his old friend from 100 years ago. And but a lot of what Aang has to learn here, like the thinking differently, but also is he prepared to fight for his friends? I mean, okay, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves because I want to talk about the challenges and the fight with Boomy at the very end. But this is a thing that early on in the fight, Boomy's like, oh, you're just using typical airbender tactics.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, he's trying to point out to him, that's not going to work. You've got to fight me as an earthbender. You can't fight me as an airbender. You've got to fight me as an earthbender.
Yeah.
And because he's like kind of going, okay, well, eventually you're going to have to fight the Fire Lord. Eventually you're going to have to like really take on masters. So you can't just do the usual stuff. You have to think differently. And that's kind of Aang's whole arc in this show, I think.
Yeah, it's hence why it is such an important episode because it is that thing of like I think Aang's a bit funny, like he's confident in his abilities, but I don't know, like it's he isn't that good at, not that he's not that good at fighting, but up to this point, like it's he does avoid it when he can.
I think it's that element of he's passive,
Yeah.
that he's only doing things once he's forced into them. And the
Yeah.
same thing with this, that Boomy has to take Katara and Sokka and put them into this crystal and say, okay, this is a life-threatening situation. Now you've got to do it.
Yeah.
Like he's really pushing him and saying, no, you've got to do this without being at the end of your rope. You need to make these choices. Such a great NPC.
Yeah, absolutely. And like a really good, like, it's a great thing, like being like this random crazy guy at first, but like a really good, and I think kind of unique relationship, between with him and Boomy, just in terms of Boomy just kind of being a friend. And while you think, like, you know, throughout the episode, getting like either annoyed at the character or like seeing him as an antagonist, to kind of changing it up and be like, oh no, he's just really trying to look out for Aang.
Like he says at the end, it's like, yeah, it's also really fun to mess with people.
And that. And which, like,
it's just like, he's,
it makes sense that that's the type of person Aang would have befriended as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that he's just still that kid.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder about this again, because it's been 100 years. How did that kid become the king?
No clue.
Like, but then again, you got to wonder, like, Aang is the Avatar. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like they may have, like, been putting him in situations where he would meet the children of rulers already, to be like, okay, well, you've already got this connection with someone who's going to be a ruler. So it makes sense that he might be just hanging out. Like, Boomy is his friend. Maybe Boomy is the prince of the Earth Kingdom at that point.
Yeah. Or maybe the Earth, this city just goes by, like, the oldest is the king.
Yeah. Whoever's the oldest. I want to talk about this city. What the fuck is this city? Okay. It's the guards. From the very beginning, I love this place.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're doing, like, the, they're trying to come in and they've got the broom disguise and Aang's all like, I'm Pip-Pip-Popolopolis the third. And the guards are like, yes, yes you are. Respect your elders, young children. And also, they've got the, okay, the cabbage guy. This is where the cabbage guy first shows up.
Yep.
And they just flip his cart off the bridge.
It's so, like, unnecessarily cruel to him.
Yeah. And then we see somehow he gets inside later on. So to have his cart crushed again. It's like, what? I thought they were getting rid of the cabbage. Is this a place that just runs on cabbages? Oh, my God. The cabbage man. I have a thing in my regular, oh, not my regular game, the game I run every week.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cart that gets pulled away by a horse that gets terrified. And I have the guy run after it just going, my cabbages. And every single time, it's like, I think I kind of work out who the people at the table are, but they always, someone knows what they're talking about. Someone gets the reference. It's like, because this guy, he's, is he in other episodes? I don't remember.
The cabbage guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. I'm pretty sure he's a reoccurring character.
Okay, so he wasn't like the dude that was foaming at the mouth in the last episode. He just kind of was there, and then that's it. That's the only guy that does that.
No, I'm pretty sure the cabbage guy appears a bit.
I know he's in Korra, but I just thought that was like a callback to
the favorite from this episode. Well, yeah, it's not him in Korra.
It might be, you don't know.
There's no way it can be him in Korra.
Oh,
I do love, talking about this bridge, like, it's just this, like, jagged piece of rock going up to this wall in the city. We've established their earthbenders. They could build little rock rails. They could make it look nice. But they've just got this strip of stone.
Big strip of stone. Well, I love this as well because it is a, like, I've got my notes here. This city is designed for the chase sequence down the cards.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they went, hey, cool, let's do this thing where he goes down a mountain and it's a big roller coaster. Like, all right, why? I don't know. But they've then thought about it and gone, okay, well, they are an earthbending nation.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who can bend earth like the way they can doesn't need stairs. Like, they just use the ground to push themselves along.
Yeah.
Like, it, once you kind of go into it, it, a lot of it makes sense.
Yeah, even such a simple... Sorry, go.
No, I was just going to wander meanderly.
I was just going to say, such a simple design choice as well of having, like, the road leading up to the city to hit a wall. Like, not a gate, but a wall that they then lift up. But it's just, like, that's so, like... I don't know, it's so cool not having, like, a... like an actual entrance to this place without the use of earthbending.
Well, this is what we saw with the air temple, the southern air temple as well, that you could only get in if you were an airbender. And it's like, it's the same here. You can only get in if you're an earthbender. And the same, once they're put into the bad room that has been refurbished, the good room that used to be bad, it doesn't have a door. It's got like air holes, but it doesn't have doors, and you just have to open up the thing. So, like Sokka says, it is a prison, but it's also for an earthbender, it's just a room.
Yeah.
And like, that's a really fascinating element of it, that it's just, this is a place designed for having that ability. Which, yeah, I don't think it's good world building, honestly. It's just an easy way of creating something. But then you have this chase sequence, which is fucking ridiculous. Like, it really does feel like they go from the very top of the city all the way back down to the gates.
Yeah.
Like, they're just bouncing off everything, and like, they're all in ridiculous outfits, and it's just like, yeah, we wanted a cool chase sequence, and then he gets captured by the king. It's like, alright, that's kind of what we're doing now. It's like, what? No. Did you just need something to add some action sequence to fill in?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
This episode is kind of built like an adventure for a role-playing game. You've got the encounters to get them through. You've got, all right, you're going to have an encounter at the gate because you've got to get in.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have an encounter in the city as you do a chase. Then you're going to have an encounter with the king, and then you're going to have the challenges.
Yeah.
And it's very, it feels like it's a railroad, honestly. No matter what they do, you're going to those challenges.
Yeah, and it, but again, like, that whole chase sequence is the reason Aang's there, isn't it? Like, and not to get chased, but he's there because he's like, I want to go on the slide.
I want to go on the slide. My friend Boomy told me about a slide, and I wanted to go on it.
This is why, this is what we discussed in a previous episode. The mistake was made by giving Aang's player that friggin' map.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this place has got a slide? Really, no, we're going there.
We're going there. I love this party, honestly, because it feels very much like, all right, they've got this one session in this town. They've made it to here, and they're like, all right, we're going on the slide. They've been on the slide, and now they're in prison. And they're like, okay, just sit there, and you'll have some encounters, and then you'll get to go, because they're going to be easy encounters. Like, no, we got to get out of this prison. Get Momo and shove him in a wall and see if he can go get Appa. It's like, just accept that you're on the rails. Just let me get to my adventure. Let me get to my encounters, please.
Oh, my God.
It's so great. And he really does... I've really got to force you into this because you just want to talk to this king. All you want to do is talk to the king. I've really got to go, okay, your friends are imprisoned in Crystal. All right? They're imprisoned in Crystal, and now you've got to save them. Now will you do it?
Yes.
Oh.
Really, like, really have to push them into this, like, into this thing where it's like, just please, just stop for 1 second. Stop trying to escape. Stop trying to roll. Just listen to this king.
Stop trying to persuade him. Stop, like, talking about his outfit. Stop. Just look. He's got an option for you. He has your way out of this ready. Like, did you? Okay, I can see you didn't read the briefing packet. Because again, this is what I love about the final challenge, where Boomy's like, "What is my name?" And they're like, "I don't know. What is there a clue?" It's like, if you'd read the briefing packet and remember that there is someone who looks just like him, but much younger, who's crazy and laughs like that, many years ago, Like, Aang, you kind of should have been on top of that one a lot earlier. But it's also, hey, now you get to actually remember, and if anyone was paying attention, you figured it out.
Yeah.
So it's not even a it's finally the reward for reading that briefing packet about the city I created for you. Oh my god. It's everything about this episode I adore.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous and stupid, and this is what I come to Avatar for.
No, I know. I think if I remember correctly, when I was younger watching this, I wasn't a big fan of Boomy.
He's old and gross.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what it was. Like, oh, he's old and gross, and he's just doing this to be mean to Aang. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like... I never had Foxtel, which is, you know, the only way to watch it, I think it was, back in the day here.
Back in the day. Foxtel, for our American listeners, yeah, is like cable.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. It is. It's cable. It's
didn't like have cable. So it was just... I never watched it all together, like, in order. So it was just, like, this random episode with this annoying old dude is bullying this kid. But, like, obviously, like, as then I got older and then watched it again, I'm like, oh, no, like, this is, like, great. And, like, the world building, having this stupidly designed city, but so incredible as well. It's... Yeah. I love it. Even the shots of seeing the Earthbenders pushing the carts of goods around on these railing systems. It's so good.
Well, I think this is the first time we've really encountered Earthbenders.
Is it?
I believe.
I think you might like, be right.
Because Warriors of Kyoshi, they're not benders. They're warriors.
Yeah, they're a part of the Earth Kingdom, aren't they? But they're not.
Or, yeah, so I think they're technically separate because they're like, that's why the Fire Nation doesn't come
in. Oh, right, of course. Yeah,
we don't take sides. But I think this is the same sort of style. It's like, we're separate entirely, so we're not too worried about the war, but we're also, you're going into the Earth area and we need to see, well, how does Earth bending work? And this is kind of the opportunity when Boomy and Aang are fighting, to show, hey, this is something that Earth bending can do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that example of, for D&D, where you show them all the abilities that they might be able to do later in levels, or show them abilities they might be able to learn.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's a cool thing that this NPC can do. Do you want to be able to do it too?
Yeah, exactly.
And also, I mean, just thinking also, like, here are some cool mechanics that you might not have considered. I think that's something that players can, the game masters can learn as well. If you see players doing like a tactic, I don't know, I'm thinking something like hex someone and then throw a fireball at them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, cool. That's something that the opponent should be able to do too.
Yeah, exactly.
Just that element of showing the an encounter, showing the stat block, I guess. We could call it showing the stat block of, well, that's not a great way of describing it. Showing the skills, showing the abilities. I'm just saying words. Showing the abilities to spark ideas and go, okay, well, how can I use this in another way? And fucking hell, this episode is so deep, man. That's what Boomy's saying the whole time.
Exactly.
Oh my God. He's taught me so much. Wow, my mind. This is an on-air realization. I feel like, so there's a moment at the end when they're trying to guess his name and Sokka's like, Rocky, because of all the rocks. And it's just silence. And then Katara's like, we're going to keep trying, but that was a good effort. Just, oh, it's completely deadpan as well. It's like not patronizing. It's just like, well done, but no. And this whole episode is that. Like, the disguise, it's the ridiculousness of Boomy at the feet. We're going to throw you a feast. Yes.
Yeah.
And let us leave. And what the fuck is this episode? I love it so much. Why does he even have these challenges?
Yeah, no,
like, he's got fucking giant caverns that he can fight people in.
Yeah, he's got it all pre-set up. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
There's a moment when he does, like, the fake-out. It's like, through you, a feast. And one of the guards like, oh, no. It's like, he's done this before.
Yeah, the guards look so done with him. Like, he's like, such a difficult, like, king to deal with.
Yeah. But when they have that moment of, do you mean the bad room or, like, the good room? Like, the one that's refurbished? Like, the guards are just as bad.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like this is just how the nation operates. Oh, I love this as a mad king.
Yeah.
Like, NPCs in general are always fun to mess with a party. But you see, there's like the bad mad king, which is very very classic fantasy. It's like, we've got to take down the bad king because he's ruining the land and he's destroying our homes and et cetera. He's taxing the poor people. That you see in like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like he's just gone crazy or he's just a bad person. And then you have the mad king like King George in real life, who wasn't so much mad as just, I mean, he was mad. I can't remember what he had, but they fixed it eventually. But he's completely incapacitated. And it's just like, we can't rule. Like, he cannot rule effectively. And then you have Boomy, who is just a third type of mad king. He's the crazy king, but crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, like, there's all these factions, you know, Mashu, that are jockeying for power and trying to remove him, and he's, like, a member of six of them. Yeah. Just bringing them down from within. And I want to create an NPC that, like, Boomy, where it really is just completely wacky but so powerful he just doesn't care anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, lettuce leaf.
And
just he's trolling the party.
But it's that thing as well, and what makes Boomy great is, instead of just being, oh, he's crazy and that's it, he is, like, deep down, he is clever. Like, he's doing this for an actual reason. He's not, like, he hasn't lost his mind fully.
No. He's got the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
It's like he's there for a purpose. Like, he's there because he's connected with Aang.
Yeah.
And, like, he's got that what do you call it? He's part of the backstory.
Yeah.
Did
you watch this? I'm sorry, go.
Did I watch this when? I just watched this now.
No, I was going to say, right now. Did you watch this episode in the live action version?
I didn't. I haven't got up to any. Okay. Like, I stopped watching it after episode two. I don't know if I'm going to keep going, to tell the truth.
Fair enough.
Mainly because it was so forgettable.
Yeah.
The first two episodes were very forgettable. I did see an interesting point that there is just as much live action footage as there is of the animated series for season one.
Right. Okay.
But it feels rushed.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that.
Yeah,
that
Boomy happens. Boomy doesn't translate well, in my opinion.
No, he wouldn't.
No.
Partly because it'd be so hard to have someone that old, that ripped, and wearing that kilt or that tiny little dress he's got on. All right, we promise this episode isn't going to be all just giggling about Boomy. But let's talk a little bit more about Boomy as this introduction of a character from an NPC from a character's backstory. Because I know, Danny, you want to discuss this. Like, when's a good time to bring that sort of character in? And let's talk about this as... Well, we'll use the example of this show is RPG sessions. And this would make it, maybe the fifth session that they've been? Maybe the third or fourth?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I would say this is about the right time to bring in someone like Boomy.
Yeah.
Like, I think you've got characters like Sokka and Katara who have other elements of their backstory. Like they've gone looking for their father, sort of like they've got fathers and cousins and uncles and things and whatnot out there.
Yeah, and you started in their town.
Yeah. Yeah, Aang doesn't really have anyone else.
Yeah.
So I feel that bringing them in early on, particularly when you've got a character that's that far removed from their NPCs and their backstory,
yeah,
it's a good idea just to kind of keep the player on track and reminding them, like, oh, you do still have these connections.
Yeah.
I do... I'm wondering if, in this case... how much of Bumi was the game master and how much was what Aang gave him?
Well, I think what Aang would have given him is the kid, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how do I translate this childish behavior into an adult so it still feels like the same character? But he would have to be a really old man.
Yeah.
And
I'm also wondering if it was a little bit of like, okay, so you've got this friend and you're like, oh yeah, I know all about this place because of my friend way back when. You're like, all right, cool, cool, cool. He's still around. But also, he's just like you. And all the things that you're doing to me, I'm going to do to you.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there was much. There wouldn't have been much discussion. Like someone like Aang... or I don't know, we're just kind of assuming that they're all actual RPGs, but I feel that there was a kid that I knew in this place, so I know things about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's that very blank slate of how much the game master's been given.
Yeah,
got just like a general personality and a general location. It's like the game master's been left to fill in the rest.
Yeah.
How much detail do your players give you in NPC backstory?
It varies, obviously, between players. You can get essays, you can get like, I know a guy, he has a hat. All right.
He's got a hat that I stole once.
Yeah, so it can vary, and then obviously with that your creative liberties with the characters will vary as well. I think, like, you know, you were saying before, like, if you have a, if you have, like, a character and, like, that said, talks about someone in their past, like, oh, it's a, what's it called? Like, they're a mean person. And that's it. Then you're like, all right, well, that's what I've got to go off. But then if it's, like, all these nuanced...
This was their bully. Yeah.
Yeah. Then if it's this nuanced backstory and stuff, then it... like a lot of the time if you want to introduce that character, you do want to make sure you adhere to that backstory. If you've approved it as well, you don't normally really want to bring in the character and then completely like make them completely different, unless there's a story purpose for it, I guess. But yeah, it can be...
I was thinking about this. Yeah. I was thinking about this watching the second campaign of Critical Role.
Yeah.
Where a lot of these characters have NPCs from their backstory. And the two that I noticed most, obviously, were Jester and her mother, and then Beauregard and her father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that Laura Bailey's involved in two of these, because it did also kind of tie back Vex's father in the first campaign.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like in the first campaign, they said, okay, like I'm sure people can correct me if they've said differently in interviews. In the first campaign, they said, no, our father abandoned us.
Yeah.
That's the relationship we have. And in the second campaign, I think it was just, for Jester, her mother is a lounge singer, had a bordello, and loves her, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's kind of like all that was given, because I remember watching it the first time, and Jester was saying, "Oh, I just asked mother for money," and I was really worried that it was going to go in the direction that she's now getting cut off. Like this is where the money ends. She's got to go out and make it on her own.
Yeah,
and that's a nice little dramatic dramatic moment, but it also doesn't match with what the character has. And
Yeah.
that was very much how the player was acting it up. Like the player was like, no, this is the relationship I have with this NPC. So I as a viewer, wasn't really paying attention properly, because Matt Mercer was leaning into what the player had given him in that regard.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like when it came to Beauregard and her father, there were some things that the player, Marisha Ray, didn't know about her dad, about what was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot there. Like you can see it in Marisha Ray's face, when they're playing with that, and like as she kind of starts to discover certain things, yeah, and that can be fun. That can be really good when you do throw a bit of some curveballs at the players when like they have a bit of an expectation as to what they're gonna see, and then when it does go in a little bit of a different direction, it can be a real fun moment. For the players as well. But I will say you do have to be a little bit careful, depending on the player, because some people will want one to one exactly what they're expecting of this NPC when they meet them.
Yeah. I
Which
think those are the cases where they need to specify this is the idea I have for them.
yeah. And again, all of that comes back to like your session zero. Talking about expectations, discussing things like that as well. And again, like communication off the table is always the most important thing to make sure people are having the best time that they can. But yes.
I'm particularly bad for stuff like that.
Yeah.
I tend to throw things at my game master that I only come up with like the session beforehand. I remember a couple of times, there was one time I had a half orc fighter, and I very much wanted his mother to be an orc and I wanted his dad to be a human, and I had absolutely no idea about any of them. I just knew the mother was dead, the father was gone.
Yeah.
That was it. That's all the information I gave. And he came to me and said, "Hey, I've kind of got an idea of who your character's dad might be. Can we just go with it?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course." And that was really fun. And there were lots of role playing opportunities for that. And then the next campaign he ran, I gave him a character who was just kind of a jerk. He was the classic bard, not quite the classic bard, but I was like, "All right, so he's got a bit of damage. That's why he's acting like this. But I don't know what that is. I have no idea." And there came a moment where everyone had to face their greatest fears. And like in this little dream sequence, and he got through all of them, and he turned to my character and goes, "And I've got no fucking idea what your character wants." Was like, "Oh shit, I better give him something for next time this occurs." So that's when I actually come up with a backstory and be like, "Oh, this is why he acts the way he does," and all these other things. And I again ended up having daddy issues, but
Yeah.
it's like he just had zero backstory before then, and it really was just that. Giving him nothing to work with, like not even here is a character to have. It's just zero, and I think giving a game master something really helps. Like saying, "I have this connection that
Yeah.
can be brought in, that can be used, and their personality. You can either work with them together or have it come up on the fly."
Yeah.
But as long as there is something in there, as long as there is an idea that can be used,
Yeah, exactly. And
it's
there's
useful.
been many times when like it's not the first session or it's like multiple sessions in when someone brings an idea to me, like, hey, what if I knew someone from this place, and you can like it doesn't always have to have existed from the very start of the concept of the character either. It all does kind of evolve. And I was gonna say as well with the character like Aang, it can be a bit hard with having characters and their backstory when because he's all of his backstories 100 years ago. When you come across something like that and you're like, oh well shit, I can't have all these connections in the world that make sense. And that can be a bit hard if you want to like especially in keeping like this character what's the word? So the player engaged as well. Like if they're like you know, Katara's got the other player who's playing her brother, and they've already been to their village, and there's the thing of their father that they said is gone, and Zuko, who's doing his own thing, but he's with his uncle character, and he's got all these connections there. And then you have Aang, who's kind of got no one. And yes, you can play into that a little bit, but it can be hard to try to, like, incorporate that when your players have whatever backstory, whatever reason that would cause them to not really know anyone. Even, like, say, if the character's from another world or something, like, they've fallen in from a different realm.
It's like Aang, like, there's the three pillars of RPG or of D&D, where it's exploration, role-playing, and combat.
Mm-hmm.
And Aang's backstory has the exploration and the combat. Like, he's got to go and defeat Fire Lord, and he's got to discover all these things that he didn't really see, get a chance to see before. Those are those two. But he doesn't have any reason to interact with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that. It's like, all right, so if you're playing an alien character, how do you get them to interact in those three ways? How do you get them to... Like, there's that problem in... It could be they're fine with combat, they're fine with role-playing because they want to discover everything about other people say and what is this human thing called love.
Yeah.
But they're not interested in why the world operates that way.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go to the Earth Kingdom to investigate stuff because they're like, but I'm not from here, so I don't care about that.
Yeah. I'm here for the slide,
and
that's about it.
Yeah. You go there for the slide. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't even go there. It's like... This is a very powerful earthbender. You could learn from him. No, we're not going to do that. We're off. Off on another adventure.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm not doing earthbending yet. Water is where my head's at, yeah, even though I haven't done anything to push for that currently. But
no, of course not. He doesn't have to worry about it. He's doing his grand tour. He's going to Kangaroo Island.
Man.
What was I going to say? Something more about the characters from backstory and Aang stuff. It's gone. It's faded out of my brain. That happens sometimes, particularly when I'm getting sick. There was another thing I wanted to mention about this episode. I want to talk about the challenges in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because these three challenges, they're very... Well, are there three challenges? They're more, aren't there?
I'm pretty sure there's three.
Let's see. The challenge where he has to say what he thinks of his outfit.
Yes, that's true.
Then there's the key.
Yeah.
Then there's Flopsy.
Yeah. And there's the fight.
And so there's technically five. Oh,
then there's the fight, and then there's what's my name.
Yeah, so there's five in total.
Yeah.
Because he does say, like, it's, hey, it's not, it's not one of the deadly challenges. It's not a test.
Mm.
It's not a deadly test, but it is one of the tests.
Well, also, it's kind of not spoken as a test, but at the table, he kind of throws certain things at Aang.
Yeah.
To make sure it's...
To,
like,
test him.
Because, like, he tries to feed him meat,
yeah,
at one point, and then he's like, no, I'm a vegetarian, which I take as a test a bit. Like, oh, yeah, just checking that it is...
That's
you.
Sure.
And that you're not an imposter or anything.
No, it's some scam artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when he throws the chicken bone and makes him stop it with the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think he's always testing him.
Yeah.
Which is super cool as well. What was I going to say? Yeah, all of these tests, they're open-ended, in my opinion. Like, let's say you've got those tests in a D&D session,
mm-hmm,
particularly Flopsy.
Yeah.
Like, Flopsy, you've got this goat gorilla. Is it a goat gorilla or is it a goat gorilla?
Wait, is it goat? No, it's a... I don't know.
It's a goat crossed with a gorilla.
But it's also a bunny.
No, it's a goat because it's got horns.
But it's got the ears of a bunny.
Flopsy.
Doesn't it?
Goats and bunnies have very similar ears, if you look.
Oh. No, I guess you're right. Yeah, goat gorilla then, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this goat gorilla. Like, the bunny there makes you think it's a bunny. It's a good little...
Yeah.
misdirect from the thing. But that can be a combat encounter.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it doesn't have to be, and it's not intended as one, but it can be. And the same for the battle at the end. Like, it is a combat encounter, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Like, it can just be, I'm using skills to avoid a lot of these things. So it feels like they've just kind of gone, okay, here is a challenge. How do you solve it? And it's going to be based on your decisions. And if you come up with something that seems cool and roll high enough, then it succeeds.
Yeah.
With maybe an answer. I'm just wondering, like, challenges like this, I really enjoy. I particularly like that idea of pitting allies or allies giving the party challenges.
Mm.
Like that whole prove you are worthy to take my sword.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, rather than just, yeah, here you go, here's the magic item you want.
Yeah, when it's not always life or death either. Like, Aang was never in peril, really, while he may have thought he was. Like, there was never a point where he would have actually, like, killed Aang.
And neither were Satara. That's a weird combo. Sokka or Katara.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's harmless candy crystal, which of course is deadly for your teeth, but still. I like that idea of giving players an opportunity. The stakes aren't life or death, but they do still matter. Like, you do still have to achieve this.
Yeah.
I have a few groups I just assume would try to cheat anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They always try to cheat.
Even, like, the thing with his name, I guarantee there'd be some groups that'd be like, all right, what we're going to do, we're going to sneak into his room, we're going to try to find his diary, we're going to see if, like, instead of just, like, no, think, just 2 seconds, just, like, stop, think about the character, think about the backstory, please.
There are also so many other options. Like, he could have just asked one of the guards. Like, there's no reason why he has to guess. Like, he didn't say, you have to tell me your name, my name. You must know it by now. It's like, no, just ask someone his name. It's really easy. So, yeah, that all these challenges do have multiple solutions. I have a heist that I run, which is pretty much a problem, a challenge in this regard.
Yeah.
And it's not only got multiple options, but it also has multiple solutions that I give the players the setup. Like, okay, there are these locations where you can go, and this is what the locations have. What do you do?
Yeah.
Because whatever you try is most likely going to be successful. Because, you know, you're heroes, you have abilities, you're able to do these things that people aren't expecting. Something's going to go wrong, because something always goes wrong. But the problem isn't, the challenge isn't the, it isn't getting the goal, it's what you come up with.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you deal with all these things that are there? Because, yeah, you're probably going to be right. I'm just like kind of babbling on that one. I feel like it's open-ended challenges and open-ended problems are something that a lot of people say. It's like, here's a wall. I'm just going to let them bang their heads against it until eventually I go, yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah.
And I know some people, certainly some players, don't like that response.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why I made the heist idea. It's like, I'm going to give you the sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
You can play in it. And whatever you come up with, that's how the story goes. Because I don't have a solution. There's no one solution to this.
Yeah.
Same with Flopsy. It's like, you've got a bunny. If he'd caught the bunny, do you think Boomy would have gone, that's not Flopsy?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it depends.
What's some of your favorite challenges?
What's some of my favorite? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like you said, like, I do like when it's open-ended. I like when it, like, the player can feel like, oh, I accomplished that in my way instead of, like, the set way it was supposed to happen.
I did it my way. I'm going to stop that before I have to pay a license fees.
I do like challenges that, yeah, like, aren't, because obviously combat is the most common challenge. But something where, like, yeah, you could probably use your fists if you wanted to, or if you thought about it a different way, or definitely ones that, I think use the environment around you are really fun challenges, because they can always go in so many different directions. And can really, I think, really make the player feel good about it as well. When they're like, oh yeah, well, if I use this rock and I push it into this wall, and those type of challenges are great, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think if they can interact with the environment and realize, I guess it's kind of like finding the key.
Yeah.
To something. If they can go, oh, I use that rock to lift myself up or climb up on something. Which I think is why people don't like open-ended challenges as much.
Right.
Because if I give them a room, I say there's a room here, and they go, oh, is there a rock or something I can climb on? I go, yeah, there is. They're like, that wasn't easy. I could have just like made that up myself. But if I say, okay, so there's this room and there's a big rock in the middle, and like you're doing all this stuff, like if you give them some of the elements for the for it, and then they're using that part of the environment, they're going, okay, well, I moved the rock. Ha ha. I see your problem now, Game Master. I have solved it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those ones where you can bring in the environment as well. And this is why the Boomy fight was so cool, because he was kind of using the environment.
Yeah.
In the combat. Like he was creating the sand for him to fall in.
Yes. And that's as well, like, also with in terms of both world building and trying to, like, make things feel a lot different when you're dealing with earthbenders in this case. Like, the environment is the most important part of all of it. Like, you've got to make sure the fight incorporates the environment, because that's, like, their whole thing.
I'm wondering whether this might be an example of just, if you've got the three pillars, for every encounter use, or every encounter you want to be challenging or interesting or memorable, use two of those pillars.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got a combat, which is also a role play aspect, or you've got a combat, which is also exploration and using the area around you, or you've got role play that's also a puzzle solve.
Yeah.
And like having those connections, I feel is exactly what this has done. It's done the two elements that, the combat and exploration of the Boomy fight, where, and I guess maybe the combat and role play of the Flopsy fight,
yeah,
where he's got to figure it out, but also then tame Flopsy, because again, he doesn't actually have to tame Flopsy. Flopsy's just chasing him. Flopsy wants a hug. Like Flopsy's just friendly.
It's one of those, like, things where you make the player friendly. Feel really bad if they turn around and like kill Flopsy.
Like, yeah, that was the last good ruler in the world. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't do. I'd have Flopsy be healed. Flopsy's too cool to be healed. It makes total sense that of course Boomy's going to have a Flopsy.
Yeah, of course.
His massive creature.
I think I've said it. I think I've said it on this podcast before. But, like, any time I've got, like, players and they, like, attack guards and fight them for the pure sake of them being guards, and, like, a lot of people just see them as antagonistic.
Yeah.
And if they kill them and stuff, I've always got something on their person or stuff to make them feel bad, whether it's, like, a handwritten letter to someone or a drawing or something like that. Like, oh, shit, that was a dude. Like, that was a whole person that was just doing their job. But it's that thing where it's
like that.
It's like
you make them real.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't have to kill them. You just didn't like them because they were a guard. And it's that same thing. It's like this was he looked scary. Doesn't mean he is.
It's fun doing that with like gang members or like street toughs that are trying to mug the party.
Yeah.
And like, because they're a little bit like, all right, well, we can kill these people.
Yeah.
But particularly if they're in a town, it's like, maybe you shouldn't kill them. It's always when the bard uses vicious mockery, the first thing they go to is like, oh, your mum said this.
It's always the
And
mom.
my response, it's always the mum. And my response is always, wait, you know my mum? She left so long ago, I don't remember her anymore. That's if it works. And just to make them feel more human. And it doesn't stop them getting cut down. But if they do feel a little bit too bad, I'm like, okay. And as you search the body, you find like a list of like names where they've been selling drugs to kids or something. Like these are bad people
Yeah.
anyway.
I had my players in a recent game I ran, they were fighting skeletons, which are obviously, your very typical like undead evil guys. And
Yeah.
this one skeleton they did this massive hit to, and instead of like reacting and like fighting them, he just like held his face and he's like, "Ow!" And just like sat there like not liking how much that hurt. And just like telling him, like, "I don't like this, like I don't like this pain, this is mean," and like made them feel really bad about it. He was just like holding his
Wow,
face.
is this what pain
Yeah,
feels like? I don't like
exactly.
it anymore. We had one. This is actually the same character that didn't have the backstory. We came across the game master had us come across like this nymph lying, forest nymph lying in a pool, and of course she's like using wisdom on or like a charm effects on all of us and like trying to bring us in to go in the water, and everyone. The two women at the table, actually all of us, honestly, were incredibly suspicious of this nymph.
Yeah.
We're like, she's going to try and kill us. She's going to try and kill us because that's what happens is we're going to try to kill us. And all of us, everyone except one player, had failed their save. So like, no, we're role playing it out. We're really good. And that one player is like, nah, I punch her in the face just to kick off the combat. And the game master, in the split second, decided, no. This isn't a combat. It's just you punch her in the face and she clutches back, clutching her nose like, ow, God, why did you do that to me? I was just trying to be your friend. And it's like, oh God, you just punched a woman in the face. Like, she's not like a combatant. She just uses like manipulation and stuff. She's not a physical fighter. But yeah, I love that when you damage someone, particularly a weaker person, and make them feel bad. It's like, oh, you shot me in the kidney. Oh God, I need that. I was going to donate it to someone. It was the left one. That one I can use. You shot me in my arm. I need that for reasons. My absolute favorite. I was listening to the One Shot podcast. And he had a troll who got hit in the face, and it's just kind of like a response to all those things we're just saying. He gets hit in the face, like, ah, oh, my face, my horrible, horrible face. And I think anytime someone gets hit and they respond, players enjoy
Yeah, absolutely.
it. I think we just went on for like a full tangent about like just things we found
It
funny,
did.
which
Sorry.
kind of tracks with this episode. No, I think we're reaching the end of what we can talk about in the episode anyway. So we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah.
I want to thank everyone for listening, and I want to thank everyone for leaving reviews and ratings on the podcast catcher of your choice, so we can get out to more listeners. Come back next week when you subscribe, so you can listen to us again, where we're going to be talking about episode 6, Imprisoned. I
Imprisoned.
suspect there's going to be a prison. Lots of stuff to talk about in prison episodes. And what else do we need to say? You can find us on Instagram. The podcast is at DNDNTVPOD, or myself, which is at Talumin, TalumInH3. Danny, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at danny.calamari. I'm also again gonna be on the live stream Let's Roll for Dragons. We're gonna be doing a Jurassic Park game.
Ooh.
I'm just a player on it. I don't even know what system we're playing at this very moment, but
I was about to ask. That sounds so
I
cool.
heard dinosaurs and I said, I'm in. Like that's all I
Yay.
need.
When is that streaming?
That should be streaming. It would be on. That's actually, you know what? I should have had this prepared, to be
You
fully
should have
honest
had
with
this
you.
prepared.
I really should have.
Look, you're coming onto the D&D and TV podcast. We don't prepare in advance. That's not our style.
Okay. It is on Thursday the 11th at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Australian Eastern Time, which I believe is probably looking about 11 p.m. US Western Time, which makes it like 1 a.m. I don't know. I'm trying to do the math. Time zone's bad. I got to apologize to Ben Burr from Ghostfire Gaming for all the times I give him shit about not knowing when his podcast starts. 6 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Times, and it was on the, sorry, Roll for Dragons.
Let's Roll Twitch for Dragons, stream. Yes.
Let's Roll for Dragons. All right, so everyone check out Danny being a dinosaur hunter, or possibly just eaten by a dinosaur. I'm
definitely eaten by a dinosaur.
Nice. You can also send emails to us if you want us to cover some sort of dinosaur-related show. Oh my gosh, if we do Primeval, fuck yes. Oh, I'm so on board for doing Primeval sometime in the future. Everyone go watch Primeval after you watch Avatar. You can email us at dndntvpod@gmail.com. We are also brought to you by Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service in Melbourne, which is found on mastersofalchemy.au, all one word, where you can book us for private games. You can see what events that are coming up. There is going to be the campaigns at Fortress Emporium again. There's also the weekly beginner sessions for Dungeons and Flagons at Fortress Emporium, which I believe is only $25 a head. You get a free drink, you get a cool game session, and you get a little character sheet to take home and remind everyone that you are awesome. So until next time, again, thank you for listening. Be kind to yourselves. Stay safe. May all your hits be crits.
Yip, yip.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.